the Rebel Radio Podcast and the Rebel Radio Podcast.com. I need to get off. I always do that at the end of the show, but lately I've been trying to do it more at the beginning so that if you're one of those people that are listening, you don't listen all the way through and you miss the website, how dare you?
How dare you? Yes.
I'm calling you out right now.
Just listen a little longer.
But episode 396, man, we are officially counting down to 400. 400 episodes, 10th anniversary, a lot going on. And Comicpalooza 2024, just around the corner. So in the words of Penny Lane from Almost Famous, it's all happening. And, you know, and that's what's going on. It's all happening.
It is all happening. Pretty and, close together, too.
Yeah, man, it's wild, you know, and but it's exciting too, you know, man. Comicpalooza this week, was it this week or did we talk about last week? They announced Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd.
Was it last week?
Yeah, it feels like it was mostly cosplayer people this week.
Yeah, it was a lot of cosplay people this week.
Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future. Yeah, that's right, it was last week because we talked about the principal being a in Master of the Universe also.
That's right.
And he's going to be there. So that's pretty cool. You know, and of course, John Cena, if you can see him, is their major headliner.
Yeah, if you can. Yeah.
You know, so, but good stuff, man. It's Memorial Day weekend, May 24th, 25th, 26th at the George R. Brown Center here in Houston, Texas. And we will be there. We found out we will be going on to do our show Sunday at the convention. I believe time is 12 o'clock and we're going to be talking 25 years of the Phantom Menace. We're going to have some fun discussing the first of the much talked about over the last 25 years prequels. Yeah. And we're going to do a little trivia, maybe give away some prizes and we'll have some fun out there at Comicpalooza. Our live shows are always, we always have fun with those. You know, I'm a very introverted. And so live shows are not easy for me to do. But yet somehow I always manage to pull it off. But I think a lot of that is thankful to the guy sitting next to me, you, Matt, or whether it's Long hanging out with us or any of the other people. That always helps me feed off of other people. Because, man, there's no way I could get up there and do it myself. I cannot be a one-man podcaster in front of live people right now.
That's tough, dude. Especially when it's like you're trying to get that interaction. It's easy interaction when you have coworkers and then, you know, I may say something that you weren't thinking of. And then that takes us into a relative tangent, you know, a productive tangent, you know, somewhere else. And then, you know, we keep, you know, bouncing off each other and it goes good. That's usually how we like it to happen.
And if you want to hear that 25 years of Phantom Menace show, you have to be there because I kind of let last couple of years just stopped recording them. I was like, you know what? Let's do this live special people here. Yeah. You know? And if there is an option to record it, I might do it and maybe use it, but I don't know. I just kind of like to do the live thing and let people hear it for themselves and it'll be fun. And it also might give reason for people to come see us. And if anything, you will walk away at least a sticker or a pen or something, you know, we'll give you something for just saying, you know, cause and say you met the guys at the Rebel Radio Podcast. And if you're a hot chick, you can say, ooh, they're sexy.
That's right. Just try to contain yourselves. Okay. It is a family environment. We know the effect we have on women. Just try and keep it PG.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, or if you, never mind, I'm not going to go there. I was going to say, hey, if you're in town and you happen to have a hotel room, you can invite us back. But no.
Yeah, for some comic book talk.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, man. We just, it's not the most juvenile we've ever been. So, you know.
No, it is not. We have definitely been worse.
Yeah. And, yeah, for sure, man. But man, I you know, Comicpalooza, it'll be fun. It'll always run into some old friends there. You know, I know we'll have a lot of other great podcasters there, our friends at Cult 45 and Metal Geeks, and we'll be there. And so hopefully run into some of those fellas. And you never know what might happen. Last year we end up with shenanigans with being joined on stage by the guys in Cult 45 and Rob from Ramblings with Rob, and that ended up in a crazy just talk about movies and horror movies, and shenanigans ensued. And you never know what's going to happen on that podcast stage at Compalooza.
Yes. Yes. That was a great, that conversation went all kinds of ways.
Yes. Well, I mean, would you expect anything less with Brandon and Randy? No.
Yeah, no. It's yeah, that's totally, totally expected, especially from them. And they definitely make it fun. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it was a great time. And it was one of the more memorable experiences. I want to get too into our memorable experiences, because that's one of the things I had planned for our 10th anniversary show. When we get around recording it, is we're going to talk about our memorable Compalooza experiences. That's going to be part of our, because Compalooza is a very important part of our 10 years, because it's something that's helped get our show onto the map. It's gotten word out to people about it. And so we will definitely, just a little small preview of our 10th anniversary show, we'll be talking about some of our favorite Compalooza moments over the years when we record that show. You know, until then, we hope to see some of you out there. And I'm also going to be on the future of Star Wars panel, I believe is what it's called, that Sunday also. And I saw in the little write-up blurb that I'm the host. I'm not sure who talked me into that, because I wasn't asked. So I guess I'm moderating that panel.
You've been voluntold.
But I know some of the other people on it. So our friends from I Am Geeks.
Oh, Ryan, yeah. Those are good.
Ryan's going to be there. So, yeah, me and Ryan will play off of each other well. So it shouldn't be a problem working with those fellas. So it'll be fun, man. Always a good time, Compalooza, and looking forward to it.
Yeah. Are you going to go see episode one in theaters?
I don't know, man. I just feel like it's one of those movies. I just saw it on its re-release for the 25th or the 5th. No, I know, but they released it in theaters, like the 3D release.
Oh,
and maybe that's the 15th anniversary. So I saw it, and then I saw it like 6 times when it came out in theaters. So I'm like, I don't feel the need to go see it.
Okay.
You know, I could watch it in 4K at home on Disney Plus.
I saw it once in theaters.
Yeah. So it's just like,
yeah,
I don't feel the need. I just don't, man. And which is strange for me with Star Wars. Like, I was like, when we saw Jedi last year, that was exciting.
Yeah.
You know, but Phantom Menace, I'm just not feeling it. I'd rather save my money for the next week for Planet of the Apes, you know? So
makes sense.
It's kind of how I feel. But we'll see. Next weekend I could change my mind. Who knows?
You'd be like, but I don't know. Let's do it. So we'll supposed see. To have cool but, tins.
Yeah, but that's the thing, man. You go, then I end up spending money on fucking popcorn tins.
Yeah. That's how they get you.
Yeah, I know. So we'll see. But other than that, man, other than Compalooza, it's been a slow news week, other than we did get a second trailer for Deadpool and Wolverine, which strangely was a little sooner than I thought, considering we just got the first trailer Super Bowl Sunday. I knew we'd get another trailer, but I was thinking it'd be closer to when the big movie's coming out, Memorial Day, Furiosa, Planet of the Apes, something like that, you know. But we got it a couple weeks sooner than expected. Trailers definitely opens up a little bit more. Is what we're going to see is, obviously, we know this is a multiverse movie, which was rumored, but now it's confirmed, as we have, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine talking to each other and talking about the Wolverine from your world and blah, blah, blah. So, okay, pretty much confirmed. It's what we already knew. It's a multiverse movie. Lots of quick shots of people all over the internet trying to break down cameos and stuff. And I'm over there just going, like, just wait till it comes out. It's fine. You know, I don't need to know everything before the movie comes out. You're one of those fucking people, Matt. It's like, you don't need everything before the movie comes out. Just wait.
Well, you know, people,
it's much more fun when you see it in person.
Sometimes you just come across that stuff. They just, you know, someone points it out and then they share it and then other people share it. And then you have to
look at it. You scroll past it. You know, it's like, if you see midget porn and you don't really want to watch it, you scroll past it.
How are you going to just scroll past that? I mean, when Bridget the Midget
that was a bad example. Comes across her screen,
you watch her.
Especially if it's a midget and a giant.
Yes.
Big old Mandingo.
Oh, man. Well, we are talking about Deadpool. I guess that would be appropriate in a Deadpool conversation. But there are some cameos and a cameo that I didn't expect to see. But we'll see if it changes from the movie. You know, sometimes you see this stuff and it's different whenever the movie comes out. I don't think the cameo stuff from the Ant-Man, which I guess is right out of the Old Man Logan comic, the skull of Ant-Man opening up.
Done slightly different, but yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you can definitely tell there are some villains from the past in this film. Which ones they are, you know, there's some that they can't make out. There's some for sure that you can tell.
Well, here's my biggest thing. As long as they're my biggest issue with the first two Deadpool films are the villains. They're cookie cutter. They're not well thought out. The first movie was Ed Sherrickin or whatever his name is. It was just terrible. You know, and so hopefully this has a better, whatever villain is behind all this, it just tells a better story. And maybe by bringing back some old villains, it'll make it better. You know?
Yeah. People are claiming it's Professor Xavier's sister.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll see. I mean, I just hope it's not too jumbled of a movie. You know, hopefully they don't try to do too much with it.
Yeah.
You know, but
that's the only thing. It's like, this sounds great. And then, you know, the rumors that Daredevil, that Ben Affleck's Daredevil is in it, that Jennifer Garner's Elektra is in it, that supposedly Channing Tatum's, you know, once possible Gambit is in it. You know, after seeing Nick Cage as Superman, anything's possible. Anything's That's possible. True.
I honestly never thought in a million years I'd see Nick Cage appear as Superman
fighting,
except in the YouTube video, except in the YouTube videos that were out there of his behind the scenes stuff.
So this is all very, very possible, but how do they cram it into it? I do think that a Deadpool movie would attempt this because it's the only movie character that I think you can get away with doing this and that could possibly make it work. Because of how he fits in the Marvel universe. And maybe this is their bid to make a big comeback. Nostalgia.
Well, yeah. That always works. To an extent. The only problem is being rated R, you're going to hold back certain audiences. You know, and also by introducing a character like Deadpool into the Marvel universe, you're also holding him back to an extent because Marvel's and Disney aren't going to push the envelope when it comes to R-rated movies. They're going to do an R-rated film. That's cool and all, but they're not going to keep doing them.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're still, and then here's part two is of this, you're still a couple years away from the X-Men fully coming in the MCU. We know this because they haven't even started moving on X-Men film yet, right? Because they're working on Fantastic Four and Captain America 4 and shit. We, you know, Fantastic Four, great. No disrespect to Anthony Mackie, but I just don't feel we need another Captain America film. That's just how I feel.
Yeah.
And so you're introducing Deadpool in the MCU, but then where does he fit in after that? Maybe he shows up in Spider-Man 4, which a lot of people believe an announcement is imminent about Spider-Man 4, you know, because he has played with that character before. But Ryan Reynolds isn't getting younger, so he's going to sit around for 2 or 3 years before he appears as Deadpool in the next X-Men film.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just interesting they're introducing him into the MCU, and then what do you do with him next? So we'll see how the story plays out with the movie, I guess, and where they go from here. No, go ahead.
Like Jackman, I know one of the things that made him retire was just the sheer effort it took to look like Wolverine, to get into shape. Reynolds, same thing. I mean, he talks about like
fasting. He's got kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Fasting for a long time, like 24 to 40 hour fasts, eating a small amount of protein to like get his body down. And then once he's done, he said once he is done filming, he goes into like cheat mode, and you don't want to see him eat after he is like, doesn't have to do that crazy diet anymore. But yeah, both of these people are, you know, big tolls on their body. How long do you do it? You know?
Right. So, you know, so we'll see how Deadpool plays into all this, how it plays all out. And it's the only Marvel film this year until, and then there's no more Marvel films till what? Captain America next April or May, right? It got pushed back to, it was supposed to be out this summer, but it got pushed back to next year. I think that's the next film on the slate. So we'll see. I can't even think of any TV shows that are coming this year. It just seems like things are quiet on the MCU front right now as they kind of right the ship, so to speak, as we move forward.
But Echo didn't do that great. The Marvels didn't do good. Nothing's
done that great. So, you know, they've just taken a step back. So we'll see as they go on. But in the meantime, I'm trying to get my brain to – I watched some things this week. I did watch – I watched Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon Part 2.
I forgot to watch that.
Man, I don't get the hatred for these films. Like, they're not great or anything, right? But they're fine. They're fine. You know, you sit back, you watch them, you enjoy them. I guess I'm a sucker for, like, 80s, 90s style, just cheesy sci-fi, you know? And that's kind of what I took as Snyder was given this money by Netflix. He was given a sandbox to play in. Go make some movies. And that's what he did, man. And and I'm okay with that. I'm curious what the director's cuts hold, because there are some plot elements I feel like could be more fleshed out. But but that's what there's a lot more action in part two, and it's really good action, and it plays well to things. And I think critics are loving to hate on him because there's Zack Snyder, but man, you know, just go have fun with it. You know, every movie has to be, I don't know, going with the wind, you know?
It doesn't have to be an instant classic. And Snyder, you know, you're definitely not getting the Gone with the Wind factor with him. You're not getting an artistical classic. His films they're popcorn films, you know, they're meant for entertainment.
And hasn't he paid his dues? He's made films that have made money, and it's just like, and I guess the expectations for him were so high, you know, people thought he was the next Spielberg, the next J.J. Abrams or whatever, but he doesn't have to be, you know, just let him make the movies he wants to make in his career. And, you know, and I think he got a lot of unfair hatred with his DC films he did too. And I guess I'm a fan of Snyder, man. I like what he does. I like his style. People were saying there's too much slow-mo in him. I didn't feel that. I didn't feel there was any more slow-mo in Rebel Moon films than there was in his other films. You know, but part two, man, part two's is definitely fun. The first half of it's probably a little bit. Okay, here's my thing, because you saw part one. And part one, you feel like there's a lot of setup, right, for part two, okay?
A lot of setup.
So there's a little more setup in part one. And I think that's – or in part two. And I think that's what's frustrating. You're like, okay, weren't we already to this point? But it doesn't – it gives you some more background on the characters, the setup. So I guess it helps. Okay. But then when the action starts unloading, it's – I mean, the climax of the film is probably a solid hour. So that pays off. You know, it's a great climax. So I'll give it credit on that. So definitely worth checking out. I mean, you're paying for Netflix anyways. You're at home looking for something to watch, you know, this week. You know, why not watch Rebel Moon? You know, if you're sitting around, you know, not doing anything else except twiddling your butthole on your couch or something, you know? So I watched that, and I did watch the first episode and a half of Fallout.
Nice. What'd you think?
It's okay. I know I'm going to take hatred for this. It was all right. You know, I played some of the games and I thought the same thing about the games. I think they're okay. I guess I don't, it's hard. I don't like worlds that are so mixity matchy. Like there's a mix of steampunk, a mix of Western, a mix of sci-fi, a mix of 1950s, a mix of modern. And that's what Fallout is. And when there's so much genre mashing going on, it takes me out of the game sometimes, and now it takes me out of the show sometimes.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That can make sense.
I'm not going to quit the show. I'm going to try to keep watching. It's hard because it's a hard R, so I have to watch this at night when the kids are asleep, and I'm tired. I can't always – it took me 2 days to watch the first episode, you know, because I can't – I'm old, you know. And so I'll give it a shot, but – my 90 minutes into it, my thoughts are like, oh, it's okay, you know. So we'll see.
I think it gets better as it goes on.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that's what someone said. Someone's telling me, oh, you gotta get through it all, it gets better. You know, and you know, we'll see. It looks good. It's a really nice looking television show for Amazon. You know, it looks like they spent some money on it.
Oh yeah.
It's well acted. You know, the actors pull off the quirkiness of the strange world. I think they do a good job with that. And the look of it, the design looks like it's right out of a video game. I haven't made it through it yet, but people say, oh, it's the best video game adaption yet. And I was like, I don't know, man. I really like The Last of Us a lot.
So yeah, that's the comparison.
It's like, but, slow down there.
You
know,
yeah.
The Last of Us is very close to my heart. So me telling me that it's, so to speak, so we'll see about that one. And then, other than that, man, I did rewatch Dune Part 2. Fantastic. Again, it's going to be hard pressed to find a better movie this year than that. I think.
Yeah.
When we get to our movies, our top 10 movies of the year at the end of the year, I'm not saying there won't be, but right now, nothing's on top of Dune Part 2. And I had someone at work that watched it. They said, it was okay. I looked at him like, you fucking crazy. Dune Part 2 is just okay. Like, you better check yourself.
Yeah. There are people that are calling it the modern day Empire Strikes Back. And, I don't think that's unfair.
It's a big comparison, but it's not unfair. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, man, I don't know if I want to say that yet, but it may not be entirely wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it's glorious, man. Rewatching it again, I'm just like, wow, it's just as impactful at home on your smaller screen than it is on the big screen.
It really is.
Fantastic.
Especially when he walks into the South and he's like, fucking I'm the shit.
Yeah.
And he's just like, and everybody's face. I was like, man, I was like, I'd never seen Timothy Charlemagne like that. And I was like,
you always called Charlemagne.
I was ready to see. Shlomot.
Shlomot, I think it's Charlemagne.
Champagne.
It's not Sean Connery saying, this is my Charlemagne, like from Indiana Jones. It's just Shlomot.
I am Nishan Al-Ghib.
But no, he's good, man. The whole cast is excellent in the movie. It's an excellent cast. Like I said before, I'm a fan now. I wasn't a fan of Dune before. Now I am. I'm not about to read the fucking books like your crazy ass is trying to do.
I'm 2 hours into reading it.
And I don't have the patience for that.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. Just watching movies. I'm fine. Dune Part 2, man, good shit. I did not watch the new X-Men 97. I did watch, because I was getting too far behind on Bad Batch, I watched 2 or 3 episodes of that. So trying to get caught up on that.
Okay.
That way I don't get too far behind on it, because Bad Batch's season's almost done and I don't want the internet to spoil it for me, before it gets to the end, where X-Men still have, I'm not really behind. I'll watch it, in the next few days.
Yeah.
So, those are kind of the things I checked out this week.
Yeah. So I continued playing Diablo 4. And I beat Lilith, daughter of Mephisto, in the regular storyline with my rogue. And I went ahead and started another storyline with the sorceress, because I beat, I want to say I beat the first Diablo in 97 with a rogue. And whenever Diablo 2 came out in early 2000s, I beat it with a sorceress. And we'll see if I want to beat it with another class, but it's been fun. I've also inadvertently, my wife started watching Lost. I've never seen Lost. So I started watching it and I kind of like it. I was like, Pippin's in it.
Lost is one of my top 5 TV shows of all time.
Yeah. It's pretty suspenseful. Every episode is good.
Yeah. But you never finished TV shows, so I'm not counting on it with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I could very possibly get to the end of, the second season and then never pick it up again.
Exactly.
But
Lost gets a little bit easier when you get to, I think it's season 3 or 4. It's only 5 seasons. So I think they decide to cut it down to like 13 episodes a season. So it's not
okay. Quite as,
maybe it's like 16 episodes. And they did that because that Lost was interesting because it came out around the time where serialized storytelling was becoming a thing. And also, internet television was becoming a thing. Netflix was out, streaming was out. People didn't want 24 episodes a season.
Yeah.
So Lost was one of those first shows to say, hey, you know what? We can tell a really good story without 24 episodes. And that was unheard of. And where they would split the season, they had like 8 episodes in the fall, then 8 more episodes in the spring. So Lost was one of the first shows to do that. But I love Lost. It's one of my along with Babylon 5 and Breaking Bad, and it's one in my top five TV shows of all time.
Nice. Slowly checking that out.
Fantastic pilot episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
With the plane crash and everything, it's remarkable.
But I can tell why J.J. Abrams, right? J.J. Abrams produced
him and Damon Lindelof produced it.
Yeah, it's.
I mean, it's what got him the Star Trek gig.
Oh yeah. No, a lot of character actors in there. I'm like, I know that person. I know that person. Oh, I mean, especially Evangeline Lilly. You know, she's in it.
She got her big break.
Mm-hmm. And then also, I did check out X-Men 97, but I won't get into it. I will say it moves the story forward, and it gives you a look at who the bad guy really is, and the major antagonist behind the scenes. So it's that part's cool. You get a new superpower, anti-hero superpower for sure. Not anti-hero, villain superpower out of it, and pretty impressive. Good episode. Definitely check it out. Trying to make sure I didn't do anything. I don't think I watched anything else worth noting. But yeah, man. I guess other than maybe reading Dune, and reading it, I can tell that they did a good job casting Timothy as Paul Atreides. Paul is supposed to favor his mother, so a little bit more, effeminate, and boyish, you know, very boyish. You know, he's 15 in the movie or in the book, and in the movie he looks like he should be about 15. And then there's some other stuff that you may pick up on after reading the book that you may look at the movie and see it different. The interludes that are in the book, I will say the original Dune probably does a better job of capturing it, but they're so weird. It's probably best that you just leave them out of the movie, because I don't see how you could make them work. And, Villanova obviously knew that, you know, he couldn't incorporate those little interludes, because it's just, it would just throw off the movie. But interesting read so far. I'm enjoying it. I think it's easier to read than Tolkien's, Lord of the Rings, because the songs, I think, just throw you off for me in the Lord of the Rings books. There's just a lot of them. So it's not just a couple. It's like, I feel like every friggin' chapter in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings has a song.
Song and, or a poem, yeah.
Yeah. And here, there's like one in the four chapters that I've read. And I don't anticipate there being any more. So I feel like it's way easier to read, even though it's longer and a much bigger book. It's probably the size of Lord of the Rings Fellowship and Two Towers together. We'll see. We'll see if I can continue reading it and possibly finish it. But that's everything I've checked out this week.
Cool, man. Well, that will get us into our featured film this week. Kind of a conclusion to our Monsters Month, so to speak, in a way, even though it wasn't officially part of the group, but it still ties in as featuring zombie monsters to an extent. If you, as this movie is in the vein of treating zombies like a virus, which is always the version I really like.
Yes.
And that is Brad Pitt starring film directed by Mark Forster in World War Z. This was an interesting movie, man. The book came out, was extremely popular, and the book features is written from the basis of an interviewer who is trying to put together pieces after a zombie invasion, and he's going around the world and talking to people. And so to translate this to film, in similar fashion of Dune and Lord of the Rings, you had these book fans that were like, oh, you can't make this in a movie. You're going to ruin it by making an action film. Well, how else do you not make this an action film? Okay. Because of the way the book is written, you kind of had to do it the way they did.
Yeah.
So instead of them taking an interviewer piecing together the zombie apocalypse, they use a former CIA analyst who worked for Center of Disease Controls and have him piece it together to how this started in Brad Pitt's character of Jerry. And so he's retired. Well, not retired. He's left the CIA and he's working for his own business now, or he's still working. For what I gather is he still works for the Center for Disease Control, just not in the government aspect of it. And of course this happens as they're trying to go on a little family. Are they moving or just going on vacation?
I think they were just going on vacation.
Yeah. Cause they're just getting some things together in the car at the beginning and hell breaks. And man, the first half hour of this film is fucking awesome. I mean,
oh yeah,
you know, there's no doubt about it, man. As the apocalypse starts to unfold, they're seeing stuff going around. There's people slamming themselves into cars. They're eating people that are not sure what's going on. So he tries to survive and escape with his family, and the government gets him and his family out, and they tell him like, hey, we need to find how this started. So they send him with military to go and find the source of this virus that's causing the zombie-like apocalypse. And one thing I do love about this movie is it's not afraid to use the word zombie. They which I think is pretty cool. They acknowledge it because, you know, what was it, 28 days later, we're trying to acknowledge that there's no zombies. It's just a virus, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's okay to say the word zombie. Hence the name of the film. And he goes about this quest and eventually finds it's an action film from start to finish as he, goes from the U.S. Aircraft carrier as they fly him in with some military to what's the first country they go to?
I can't remember. Is it South Korea? Did you go to South Korea first?
I believe. And they don't find Jerusalem? The source there. Then they go to Jerusalem where they Jerusalem is overran as he escapes again. And they end up finding he has an idea what may cause it. He finds needs to go to a
disease he found out what control. What may be a deterrent.
A deterrent, yes.
Yeah.
And then he has this amazing airplane sequence, which is shot in the film, and he lands, and they make it to the Center for Disease Control, and as they test a deterrent, break into a zombie-filled lab. Well, part of it. There's still humans in parts of the building, and then they have the other part cut off. And he discovers a camouflage that they use a disease that is curable, but yet also the zombies won't attack people that are diseased, apparently, as he discovers while he's in Jerusalem.
Not a good host. And
so they realize that they can
infected with something.
Inoculate the world with this bad disease along with a cure, that they might be able to get the world back. And the movie ends on a hopeful note in that matter, that they might be able to fight this thing and rebuild the planet. Which is a far cry from what test screenings were. The test screenings were that the disease doesn't work his deterrent doesn't work. And it ends with Brad Pitt apparently was going to be a zombie apocalypse fighter and just say, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to die anyway. I'm just trying to fight back. And test audiences did not like that sense of no hope. So they ended up changing the ending to give it a sense of hope, which was one of the reasons this movie was much maligned for that reason, because it went through extensive reshoots.
10 years, man. Like 10 years of like
reshoots, was script, right? Problems.
Oh, no, script
the
problems.
Reshoots were, the movie was supposed to be out like in 2012, so it took a couple of years to get the movie going. Or 2000, I think the original release was like 2010, but it came out a couple of years later because of reshoots. Because they also, once the test audiences didn't like the ending, they had to reshoot parts of the film where the plot referred to the ending of the film. I guess there were plot devices that had to be changed. So it's amazing that this movie came out as pretty fucking badass as it did, considering the reshoots, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a credit, I think, a lot to Brad Pitt, who loved the project, and to Mark Forster, who was not going to give up on it.
Mark Forster did Quantum of Solace.
Mm-hmm.
So he's directed some good films.
To the point where the movie made a lot of money. It's left open. There was going to be a sequel that up to like about just 3 years ago, was still in the works, and now it seems to have canned and moved on.
Yeah, it looks like it died.
Yeah, and there was even a release date for the sequel at one point about 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was 2018 or 19. Mm-hmm. They had it on Paramount, had it on the release list for that year, but filming never got off the ground.
Damn.
And now it seems to have gone to the back burner. But what do you think about this movie, man, overall?
I think, like you said, as many rewrites and changes and back and forths and reshoots. And at one point, you know, Brad Pitt started off wanting Forrester to direct it. And then at the end, the reshoots, they were not on speaking terms. That's amazing that it came out as good as it did. I think everything, you know, once you hear rewrites and reshoots and people are fighting and they can't agree.
And you sometimes worry. You'll see decent films after reshoots, but yet you'll notice the parts like, okay, you can tell what they changed here. World War Z is pretty solid. You can't really tell, like, okay, what was wrong with this movie in the first place?
Yeah. No, it looks good. It flows good. The action's good. I don't think it's cheesy. There's some things that don't make sense. Like, you may have caught this. In the grocery store, in the dairy section, there is a display of motor oil. What's this doing here? Just weird stuff like that. But it's, you know, I just thought that was funny. I'm like, what's more? There would never be. No.
We back-to-back movies with grocery store scenes in it.
Yeah. What the hell? Yeah.
The Mist and now this.
Oh, yeah. We're on a roll here. I think it does a good job of making you terrified of what might happen if zombies were fast moving. Again, that's like the worst kind of zombie to have, is the fast moving zombie. And then in this one, they turn so fast. Mm-hmm. It's like they immediately start turning. So it's like you've got no chance. And in fact, in one scene of the movie, one of the guys commits suicide so he doesn't turn because he doesn't want to become one. But another person's arm is cut off, amputated, so that the virus doesn't spread. But somehow Brad Pitt didn't turn after some fluid getting into his mouth. Right. But I guess you have to get bit. Maybe that's it. Got to get bit.
And that's what's crazy is that this movie is PG-13, even though there is an unrated cut, which isn't that different. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty brutal for a PG-13 movie. I mean, he cuts off a chick's arm to save her life. There's blood on it. There's people getting eaten. There's jump scares. There's grotesque zombie makeup. I mean, but yet it maintains a PG-13 rating.
Yeah. I don't know how that happened. I mean, this should have been at least a slight level R, you know, a low level rated R.
It was one of those movies that would justify a PG-15 rating, you know?
Yeah, you could definitely put it into one of those little in-between rating boxes. But yeah, I think, you know, and Brad Pitt, he wanted to make this film because his kids, he wanted to make a zombie movie for his kids. And I think he made one that a lot of teenagers would like to see, and maybe that's why the rating fell as it did. He probably lobbied hard for that rating. But I wonder what they did to keep in those lines. Cause I, like you said, you know, we've seen horror movies with less blood and less violence get a harsher rating, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I think this movie is much more violent than Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, I've had that discussion before, the intensity of that film. But I think the editing of this movie is what saves it. It's edited like an action film, and it's everything's happening so fast that I think it allows for you to not focus on the gore scenes or the bloody scenes. And it focuses, especially those first 30 minutes, it tends to focus on the families more. So I think that allows it for to not be as bloody. And talk about the zombies movie, you know, like the zombies in 20 Days Later are quite horrifying. But this one, for me, when I saw this, and this movie's not even that old, to me, it kind of broke new ground a little bit with the zombies like this, where they're running up walls, they're super fast, they're turning, they're smart, they can open doors. You know, and that's what I thought that this movie, I mean, they're smart enough to figure out how to climb a wall. And that's what I thought was pretty wild about this movie too, from that aspect, is that these zombies were like, just like, I'm watching this the first time going, holy shit, man, these zombies are absolutely fucking terrifying. And they were terrifying 28 days later. And now 15 years later, we're getting another movie. And this is at the peak of zombie horror craziness. So The Walking Dead was on television, comic books, the anniversaries of Night of Living Dead, zombies were making a comeback back in 2013. And this movie was part of that.
Yeah, no, this definitely made zombies popular again. And I will say, yeah, this movie doesn't really flow like your typical zombie film.
Usually there's a buildup. This puts you right into the action.
Right into it, man. I mean, it's got to be like maybe 15 minutes into the film. And, you know, there's mass hysteria going on in the streets. And then, you know, they find a perfectly good RV, you know, which I have no idea why someone just left it over there. Another thing in that traffic scene, whenever the cop is yelling at him to get in his car, they're in traffic, but this 18-wheeler just comes out of nowhere and just blows through everything.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it would have been a little bit messier than that, but, you know, I guess they were just trying to intensify the mass hysteria, which worked. That worked. And the scene where the cop just comes in after Brad Pitt shoots two guys trying to, you know, steal or grope his wife, I guess.
Yeah. That's why I got
both of them. And the cop shows up and he's like, oh shit, you know, Hey man, I wasn't doing anything. Or, you know, I was protecting my family. And the cop is just like, you know, fuck, I don't care. You know, I'm going to get this baby food.
Cop keeps on walking by like,
yeah, everyone for themselves. And so it's like, I remember whenever I first saw that, I was like, wow, it's like cops, you know, are, you know, looking out for number one in this one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that too, bringing, you know, a different human outlook to the film as well. Sometimes you forget about the human story that can occur, kind of like you would in the kaiju films that we talk about. You know, the human story sometimes suffers, and I feel like this one they do a pretty good job of depicting the human hysteria and the human issues of this film, other than just the violence of the zombies and make you friggin' terrified of like a possible reality, you know, of this happening.
Yeah. I even like the little things in this set. It's happening so fast, but I think it's cool. Like where he takes thick magazines and tapes them to his arms and legs. It's like, it's a simple thing, but like, okay, that could work. You know, duct tape. We know duct tape solves everything. This is a movie that, man, you know, it's made 200 million US, it made 500 million worldwide. So it made its money back. $60 million opening weekend. So it was a massive hit considering the problems that the film had getting off the ground. You know, it took so long to get up. Originally, Bryan Cranston and Ed Harris were going to be in the movie along with Brad Pitt. That.
Yeah.
But they had to back out. Imagine Ed Harris would have played like the CIA guy and Bryan Cranston would have played, you know, maybe the guy in Jerusalem or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe
a
doctor at the Who place. And, you know, yeah, I wonder how the movie would turn out differently if it had not been for extensive script rewrites and reshoots. Damon Lindelof even was brought in to help rewrite the third act of the film before the reshoot, which is interesting, along with Drew Goddard, who's apparently, you know, very popular director and film script guy nowadays, you know. But I think the overall product of this movie turned out pretty well. I think a sequel could be an interesting idea if it ever happens. Where the world went after Jerry's character was able to find not a cure, but a stopgap to try to cure it and to stop it. I just really like the ideas of it's still a virus, but yet they also treat them like zombies and the undead. They call them the undead. They call them zombies. So I kind of felt that it was a nice mix of classic zombie lore along with 28 Days Later lore, you know, a little bit mix of both in this movie. I prefer, I mean, I appreciate the slow moving zombies from George Romero films, but I think I like the fast moving, terrifying as fuck. We're going to fuck you up zombies from this version.
Yeah.
You know,
because it's like everyone was like,
horror story.
Yeah. And then it makes you, you know, you used to be like, oh, you know, this is what I would do in a zombie apocalypse. Just not go outside. Right. You know, and now it's like, fuck, you can't hide anyway.
Opening doors. Yeah. You can't
hide, man. Yeah. They're climbing over walls. You know, how are you going to get away from these guys? And then, at the end, Brad Pitt, you know, betting it all on his theory. And it paying off. That was like the moment he just opened the doors and he was able to just walk among everything. That was cool. Yeah. So it movie definitely ends well. I guess in the book, the U.S. tries to cover everything up and they try and meet the zombies with military force, but it ends up just causing more casualties. And more people get turned out of it. But they don't really have that here. Here the military actually looks like they're more competent. Really the only thing that's like the book in this movie is the bones of the story, the centralized nature of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think I appreciate the movie too for being so intense the first hour and a half, really. I kind of like the calmer scene in the last 30 minutes in the WHO building, you know, where they're kind of more meticulously trying to go through the building to find the stuff they need to make the camouflage. And it kind of fits the film, you know, to slow it down a little bit to see if we can stop this thing.
Helps with the pacing.
Yeah. But overall, man, I think World War Z is a pretty badass film. Really enjoyed rewatching it again this week because it's been a bit since I've seen it a couple times and I own it. I liked it enough to own it. So I bought it back in the day because I think this is a badass movie. It's up there, man, in my zombie flicks. I think it's a cool movie. And it's a good one, man. And it was a fun Monster Mania month, you know, we covered flying insects. We covered creatures from the water. We covered Godzilla from a nuclear monster. We covered a dinosaur from the ice age being brought back to life. And we covered zombies. I mean, not a bad month of different types of monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a good variety there, man. It's like a salad, you know, a salad of monsters.
Yeah. So which one would be the tomato?
Yeah.
Probably the insects, they were a little squishy. Well, the insects, insects were a little squishy.
I thought you were talking about like the bit, you know.
No, Godzilla's the motherfucking lettuce that holds it all together. You know?
There you go. Yeah, that's good.
after we're gonna stay with strange creatures. Well, I am next week as we move towards our 400th episode, 10th anniversary in Compalooza. I feel like it's the first of the big summer movies coming out in a couple weeks here. Mm-hmm. And that's Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And we covered Dawn of the Planet of the Apes a couple years ago. And so we're going to go back and we're going to finish that trilogy over the next 2 weeks. And starting next week, we're going to go cover the middle film of that trilogy. As we're going to look back next week on Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
In a lab. You can't blame the apes.
Who the hell else am I gonna blame? We need to give him a chance.
Welcome to Animus.
Please. I've seen things. I've seen the way they are. They want what we want, to survive.
Caesar, home. This is your home. Your home.
Are you aware they are going to turn on you?
They don't want a war.
No, don't shoot!
Caesar, you have to go.
Go. Strong.
War, it's not what you want. There must be another way.
War has already begun.
So like I said, we're staying with creatures, staying with apes in this case. Mm-hmm. They're still creatures, even though they're real creatures. They're not make-believe like in these other films. The only difference is these apes can talk and are intelligent. And then not that modern apes can't talk. You know, there are apes that we know can do sign language and things like that. That does exist. But y'all know what I'm getting at here. And but man, this is a trilogy that I really love a lot. And so over the next 2 weeks, we're going to cover Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, then War for Planet of the Apes, and conclude that trilogy as people get ready to go to the theater and see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which looks absolutely amazing. Dawn is we talked earlier in the show about Dune Part 2 being the Empire Strikes Back of a modern age. And Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is one of those middle films of a trilogy that feels like an Empire Strikes Back, you know, because it's the middle film of the trilogy and really sets a lot of things going forward towards War for the Planet of the Apes. So Dawn might be my favorite of the three, if I'm being honest, even though I like all three of them a lot. And I think that's because it's darker and I like some of the changes it makes, as it takes place about, if I remember correctly, about 10 years after Dawn of the Planet of the Apes or Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So we'll see. I'll correct myself if I'm wrong on how long it takes place, but I know it's a few years after Rise. So looking forward to the next 2 weeks, talking one of my favorite modern trilogies that's been out, and concluding those films before we get to Kingdom. So any quick thoughts on Dawn?
Man, I remember watching it and didn't think I could get a better movie than Rise, but we did, man. It's definitely better than Rise.
And this Rise is the first of the two Matt Reeves films. You know, Matt Reeves did the second and third one. And Matt Reeves, I've said this before, he's him and Denis Villeneuve are the two, maybe two of my top directors that I choose to take new generations into the future of filmmaking, of those two guys. And Matt Reeves is excellent. So next week we will talk his Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Until then, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs and social media links. And we look forward, if you come out and see us at Comic Palooza 2024 here on May 24th, 25th, and 26th at the George R. Brown Convention Center. But until then, be safe out there. And we appreciate always you listening to the show, and we thank you for that. And if you have a little spare time, it's been a long time since we've had anyone drop a review on iTunes or Spotify or those sites. Take a minute. If you're listening, just hit that little 5-star button there. We'll appreciate it. Yeah. But until then, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.